This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on a Tuesday edition of the program. Merely Bo, the great Z. How you living, buddy? One more.
How did I go from off to on?
I don't know. I think we were on and then off, and then I don't know.
I'm great, dude.
Who knows?
I'm great. I have a couple of things I got to get out of the way in this first segment. So the first one is something that I witnessed on the way to the Cavs game Saturday, and I was at brunch with the great Miss K. And I saw this and I was like, I can't wait to tell Bo about it. So I got home yesterday.
Okay.
And she was like, well, did you tell Bo? And I was like,
You forgot. Cavs so game Saturday.
So we're at brunch and I look over to my left and I see a guy in a beautiful navy blue Masters quarter zip.
Okay.
Which there's that in and of itself is not really noteworthy. You see plenty of those.
You see those around. Those matriculate around. That's their business.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so I kind of looked at it. And, you know, we had just gotten some Masters gear thanks to the great Previts.
Yep.
And so I kind of looked at it and looked back and I was like, wait a second. That's weird. So I look more closely.
Okay.
And what this gentleman was doing. Okay. Was something that I have never seen before. And I think is of you as an authority on not only the Cleveland Browns, that this is the show of record of the Cleveland Browns,
yeah,
but also
that's what it is.
I think of you as an authority on quarter zips.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
What he had on, because what caught my eye was two zippers. He was wearing a quarter zip over a quarter zip. He was wearing a double quarter zip. One was kind of like the bottom one was zipped up to about here. The top one was zipped up to about here. It was quarter zip on quarter zip. I've never seen this. I didn't know it was okay. I don't believe he was wearing anything under the second quarter zip. I think it was quarter zip, fiend.
Okay. What is the, I got to.
And by the way, they were both Masters quarter zips because I could tell from the zipper. So he's wearing a quarter zip on top of a quarter zip. I've never heard anything like it.
There's a lot I got to digest here.
Yeah.
Were they of similar fabric?
Yeah. It was basically like.
So two. In other words, it would be like this vest I'm wearing today.
Okay.
If I had another one exactly like it, maybe in a different color on top of it.
100%.
Same fabric makeup, same sweater.
Like a modern, all of our quarter, the fabric of our quarter zips.
I asked because.
They were. The ones, for example, I'll give you a perfect fabric. The fabric of our congressional quarter zips. So he had two of those.
Even more stupefying. So the one thing that I was thinking was, is it possible that he has a quarter zip on and then a rain gear windproof quarter zip on top of it?
No.
Which would be bold, but the elements were what the elements were.
By the way, rain gear, you're full zipping in a rain situation.
I agree, but I've seen I think 2 weeks ago I had a gray camouflage half zip hoodie
thing. Beautiful.
That is a rainish type gear.
Gotcha.
So I've seen that. And I've never seen a stackable quarter zip ever.
That's why it caught my eye.
Yes, it's not done. I would think I could make a pass for it if they were two separate fabrics.
No.
One was like close to the flesh. The other one was a rain gear windproof. But you're saying no. You're saying that someone that this human was wearing quarter zip on top of quarter zip of a similar brand and fabric,
yes,
and function.
That's right. It's exactly what I'm saying.
I can't co-sign that. I've not seen it. It's not done.
That's why it was stupefying. That's why I tried it. I wanted to take a picture so bad. And
kind of like when I saw the Uncle Baby Billy guy at Desert and Palm Springs.
I was trying to go like this, and then I felt like he saw me. So then I didn't.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's why when I grabbed that Uncle Baby Billy photo of you in the desert, you have to be very careful.
Of course.
To be very discreet, because you don't need an interact. You don't need a.
Well, I try to make it look like, I'm texting here.
And then, look at,
Yeah. Yeah.
But not. I've never heard of it. I've never seen it. I can't co-sign it. I don't think it's done.
But it is done. It is done.
I don't advise it.
No, it would seem absurd.
That's a crazy look. I think you want to wear some sort of a collar underneath the quarter zip, a t-shirt underneath the quarter zip. I've even seen, I guess if you were done, and again, but this would all be element driven. You know, sometimes you see, but again,
it was
more
a cold
of like rain
day.
Gear.
Like to it's me, a, maybe he was like, one quarter zip is great, but
two's
quarter
even
zip
better.
Is warmer.
Well, there's a functionality to the quarter zip as well. I mean, it's the one piece of clothing that you can wear white tablecloth or golf and everywhere in between. I just have never seen them stacked. I think there were so many options it made more sense.
This is why I had to tell you. This is why it was shown.
I've got no point of reference on it. I don't.
Me neither. I've never seen it before in my life.
Is it some sort of a TikTok thing? What was the age of the gentleman? Give me a ballpark.
55 to 65.
Oh, so he's just, I don't give a damn mode. He don't care.
I am not 10 years away from not, I don't give a damn mode. Maybe it's 55.
Watch us.
Maybe it's 50.
How many things am I trying to end this spring alone?
You are.
16 fads I want to end alone.
And this one.
Well, this one I'm not even going to let start.
Yeah. Wild, right?
Yeah, and it has to be that's a conscious decision to do it. It's not like he's at brunch. So it's not like it'd be one thing even if you could make an excuse, like you're at the golf course, you're somewhere and you're like, man, I didn't have enough layers. It was colder than I thought. I just had to put one on. That's not it. This was put on purpose.
And it was worn to the Cavs game.
You saw him at brunch and the Cavs game? The same human?
Yes, in the concourse, I almost fell over. I'm like, double quarter zip. And Kayla's like, shh.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I saw it like completely. It was 100% intentional.
Wow.
It was unreal. And the buddy he was with was also in a – they were masters out, but he went – he's like, you only have one. I have two.
I got two.
I'm going to show you.
How do you know? Because I'm wearing them both.
Because here they are. You see this zipper here and then this zipper here.
So you had the zippers layered?
The zippers were layered. The lower one was more zippered than the outer. It was pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Okay. I wish I could help you there. I just thank you for exposing me to it. I've never heard of anything.
So that's wild. And then I got another little wild story about the official Nana of CBD. So she had a roof issue.
All right.
And it turned out that she needed a new roof.
A new roof. That's a big purchase.
It's a heady purchase.
Yeah.
So when the people were coming to prepare for the new roof, and, you know, they take off the old and then they start nailing the base layer down.
Yeah.
Well, in my mom's house, which was built many moons ago, I would imagine,
mm-hmm.
and I've never heard of this. I don't know if you've ever heard of this. None of us have ever heard of it, I don't think. Her ceiling and the underside of the roof, which in logic makes sense, but I think there are many layers between the two in reality in construction, were the same. So she's sitting there, and all of a sudden, whoop-shoo, 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 nails, pew, 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 all through her ceiling.
So she doesn't have a layer of insulation or drywall between her ceiling and the wooden roof.
That's right.
Whoa.
So now we have like multiple crises, right? Not only do we need a roof, the way that we're doing this is not tenable. And we're going to need a new ceiling because now there are hundreds of
nails
that have stuck through the ceiling.
I mean, what?
Okay, right? Through nobody's fault of their own.
Okay.
Now, the good news is, and this is actually my buddy Herb Schoen helped her out.
Good job, Herb.
Garfield 12323, if you need any roofing or siding help, you can write that down.
One of the greatest old school jingles.
Oh, my God. That's what they say. You're known for our jingles, but you'll love
our... 1, 2, 3, 2, 3.
That's great.
Givang.
Absolutely.
He knew it. He was ready.
Yeah, Givang with the jingle.
Givang right away.
Yeah.
Even a bigger payoff.
So that's my buddy, the Big H. So he comes in and takes care
Your
of my
buddy,
mom.
The Big H.
And solves this.
Fixed it.
She gets, first of all, she gets a metal roof, which she's all jazzed about.
Yeah.
It's last you forever. And then he came in and they put up, they had to drywall, but not drywall. They actually put wood where the nails were. They couldn't get those nails back out.
No.
So they had
nor
to build a new ceiling like a few inches down.
Yeah.
And repaint it and the whole thing. And so she was very pleased. But for a while there, she was in complete crisis. And this was coming on the heels
so
of.
So she was not anticipating nails.
Nobody
tips
was.
Of nails coming
the
through.
The roofers were like, we've done.
We've never seen this.
100
before.
Billion roofs.
Yeah.
It's never happened.
Now, this is very common in barns.
Well, this is
where I grew up. Like when
not
I would
barn.
I've re-roofed several of those in my time. And when you would shoot through, they would go through the wood underneath the roof in a barn.
Yeah, but
typically not
this
a
is
domicile.
A
no, not a domicile.
Domicile, yeah. This is coming on the heels of her having her pipe that burst underneath her kitchen floor.
It's been a tough stretch. But look, she's got the Big H.
Yeah, she got, yeah. What's that jingle again, Gibby?
Garfield 1-2-3-2-3.
It's great.
Dude, I'm telling you.
Jingles
like,
at the ready.
It was. It's literally one of the, God, it was like every Indians game on like channel 19 or 43 back in the day. That spot was like in every break.
That is great.
There you go. Gibbe knows. So that's who took care of now. He'll
that's one of the that's one of the greatest like ad jingles probably in this area. It's a top 10 maybe. Of
that's great.
It says right here
the recall.
We're recognized for our jingle, but we're known because we care.
I love
that's
it.
A quote from the Big H himself.
That's great. That's fantastic.
That's unreal.
That's a lot to take in.
Lot
that's
in.
A lot to take
double
in.
Double quarter zips, nails through roofs, cats and dogs living together.
It's all happening.
Perfect. An hour and 50 minutes left. Let's go.
Let's go.
High on the prize.
Only an hour and 48. We got you 12 already.
We had a big one. Yesterday, Bootsy was selected to speak at to do the Pledge of Allegiance at the school.
Oh,
board.
My goodness. I'm so, proud of him.
There was you would. Yeah, I've shown you the images.
There are principles in my
There were. Yeah. He was. It's always funny when I see him, like when he goes to school, it's usually in jersey and shorts or something like that. But then when he's doing an official, any sort of official business, and I call anything that's like this his official business.
This is
his official business. Then you're talking about, then now we're buttoned up, we're in a khaki.
Is there a blazer?
No blazer. He was in a buttoned up and a khaki. The hair is off the face entirely.
I'd like him in the next time we get one of these. Yeah. I'd like a blazer with a pocket square shirt, button down, no tie.
Well, I think it's he's going to wear a tie for the First Communion, so that's coming up in a couple weeks. But he will be pocket squared and ready for that.
First Communion's coming up in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's a big one.
That's a huge one.
Well, last one. This is it. We've already done the other two, so this is it.
Oh, man.
So is there a Festivus after the Communion? You're going to have obligations for days.
It's in the middle of my father's in town, and I need that to we just got to move that through. Just got to get through it.
What's the date on this?
I think we're gone.
It's the 11th.
Oh, no, we're back.
Saturday the 11th.
Oh, man.
You want to come?
Bootsy. Yeah, if I can.
Dude, that's a big reason. That's also Mother's Day weekend.
It's Mother's Day weekend. Mother's Day's the 12th.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
So he's coming in.
Coming in hot. Oh, my dad?
Yeah, what day is he coming in?
I don't know. Like, I think Wednesday or Thursday.
So you were asking him to go Saturday.
I was asking him to backtrack it so he could watch a little bit more lacrosse and then see some more
lacrosse.
He's not going to see it. He's going to get a couple of games and that's it. But there it is. So I had this happen last night. Great stuff last night. Well, the Cavs played last night.
Derail.
What kind of a world are we living in where the Cavs are in the NBA playoffs and unless I have the Bally's app, I can't watch the game.
So locally, because you can't get NBA TV without locally, right? It's blacked out because it's on Bally's.
Yes, it was blacked out.
Yeah.
So then what are the Cavs doing on NBA TV?
Well, because they play the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, who stink.
I understand. And so the
playoff games should be immune from blackout. Is that fair?
Agreed, but this is also that turf war with Bally's. I mean, that's what this is their only flex they have. So.
But could you imagine if an
game? No, but they're not the same. These things they're not linked. One is not like
somebody was telling me, well, they put an NFL playoff game on Peacock. I said, that's a national streaming app.
Correct.
That is that's NBC. Like,
yeah.
That's Peacock.
Also,
that's a huge
also to further buttress your point.
I think that was me that made that argument.
In the local markets, it was over the air, I'm pretty sure.
Of course, yes.
In the local markets, it's over the air. So this is a local market game that you either had to have the Bally's app or NBA TV.
I mean, I flipped on YouTube TV last night to watch NBA TV, and it said, I said, excuse come again?
That's it. Yeah. So
I said, I'm going to go head-to-head with you on the radio. And that's exactly what I did.
That's what you did.
And I said, you know what? Radio show.
I can't wait.
7 to 8.
I have it in the DVR. I'm going to listen to it on the way home.
It's a treat.
I look forward to
me
it.
Me and Mo Pedman have been blast.
Love it. So that's what we got spoiled, man. You have LeBron for all those years in the postseason. You're always going to get the number one TNT crew, the number one NBA show crew. You're going to get the primetime spots.
Of course.
I actually love a 7 o'clock tip. That's spectacular.
It's great.
I just like to watch it. Now, as someone, the last surviving person in their 40s who still has cable, I thrived.
You're having a great time.
I'm bouncing around. I got games everywhere. I'm able to watch all of it.
My mom has it too. It's like
it's
one
amazing.
Of my favorite things about being at her house is all the cable channels,
it's
including
amazing.
Bally's. Yeah.
And you can bounce to everything. You can see, check everything out. Cavs up 12. I'm going to jump in on this. Let's go see what the Maple Leafs and Bruins are doing. Now I'll pop over here and watch the Knicks and the Sixers. I'm bouncing around, baby. I'm living.
I've got the DirecTV Now app on Roku.
Yeah.
It's got the little sports function. You just go to the sports,
Look,
list them all, and you just go bounce here, bounce
now,
there.
I'm paying them about $400 a month for all this nonsense, so this isn't exactly financially sound.
No.
But in a night like last night, it was great. And the so this game was not very interesting, our game.
No.
Because they don't have a chance.
No, we took
terrible.
Care of business.
Yeah.
Step on the throat and let's finish this off.
They're
let's
not
go
good.
To the
this should be a sweep.
I heard Donovan Mitchell last night post-game talking about how, you know, if – you know, that shouldn't have happened in the fourth where, you know, the last 7 minutes where they cut it to whatever. And I'm thinking,
ten?
But then the next two possessions, he just went to the rack twice and scored.
Yeah.
Right? It was just a formality. Like, let's go get buckets. And that, there was
How
never a chance Orlando was going to win.
I don't understand.
Because I think a lot of the teams in the NBA are disinterested in the regular season.
So they were a try-hard team. Who was
they
able
were
to
a try-hard young team hustling around.
Team.
They have nice young talent.
Well, the
Ben
Embiid
a good
injury
player.
Kept the Sixers out of the top five, so
you
that
helped
a little
bit. You've
got
to be able to shoot the – but, like, the Pacers are way more talented than they are.
They're the complete – but they don't play
they
any
play
defense,
no defense,
so they lost in the opposite way that the –
Yeah.
They would be. They would have been a much more entertaining dance partner for the first round of the playoffs, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. It is a – you know, everyone's just kind of looking at Boston, right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's kind of it. So it's tough.
The Knicks are good.
Yeah, I mean they're fun. They'd be better if they had Randall.
Of course,
but you know they
Knicks
were clutch last
thinking
night.
Thinking that they'd won the NBA Finals last.
They've
night.
Had so little.
It's second game, buddy.
Here's what the Knicks and the Maple Leafs are like the same operation. They're like the meccas for their sport.
Yep.
They've got one championship forever ago. Anytime they have any sort of modicum of success, people go nuts for it. And so it was the same thing. And those things were actually going on. So our game, I had lost interest in a little bit because it was kind of over. But I flipped over and I was watching when the Knicks came back from five down with 30 seconds to play, scored 6 points in, 13 seconds a clock?
Yep.
Hit two threes to go up one and then end up winning it. And then the Leafs held on in the third. Austin Matthews, who scored 69 goals this year, had a breakaway to win it 3-2. So while this was all going on, and we had the Cavs on another TV, we were all in the basement, which is rare. We were done with all the lacrosse and all the practices, and they play this game with Buddy where he has a football in his mouth and they try to knock it out and chase him around the basement, and they keep score somehow, like they just created a game. And so they're chasing him around and they're doing all of this. And as this is happening, I'm in the sectional, and my wife comes downstairs, and you know, she can still bring it. She's still got it. Kid's still got a fastball. So she comes downstairs. There's a specific type of pant that I enjoy her in. Okay? So she comes over and sits next to me as if it's like 10 o'clock at night.
Just cozies right on.
And I don't even know what's going on. I'm watching the games. The kids are bouncing around. So she cozies up next to me. And I grab her backside without any thought to it. NBC goes, "Oh, God, Dad. You grabbed Mom's gut." I go, "I don't."
He said he did not.
Yeah, I swear to God. Because she goes, "I don't even know what that is." I said, "I don't either." So I don't even know what I've done. It was all subconscious.
Okay.
None of it
this
is.
This happens to me all the time, by the way.
Well, I knew. I figured you would live this because you have your children are older, and so they're more aware. NBC's my oldest.
They're
He's 12.
Direct. They're more direct.
So this is the first time that this has happened. It was totally subconscious. I didn't even realize what I had done right away.
Yeah.
God bless the kid. He was so embarrassed, beat red, like crying, laughing so hard he could hardly contain himself. I didn't realize even what I had done right away. My wife, until this morning when we talked about it, didn't realize what I had done. No point of reference. I didn't know what that meant.
We got to work on that grip strength. She was unaware.
Well, no, but it's just like a natural.
Of course, what you do.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just a natural thing.
Like saying hello.
Go ahead and give that a Google when you get home. Okay. You'll be pleasantly surprised.
I did.
Okay.
I did. I was not. I don't think he knows what it means.
Well, he knows what it means. He doesn't know that.
He doesn't know what the acronym is.
That he would want to be saying that.
He doesn't know what the acronym is. He doesn't know. Because he just. I've heard him say it a lot, and I don't know what it means. But he refers to it as almost anything with, like, a girlfriend or anything. Like, if they look good, he says that. And I'm like, so this morning I figured out what it was. We're going to have a little talk about what the acronym means.
Yeah.
Because I think his entire age group is using it incorrectly.
Okay.
Is what I think happened. So that was that. And it was, I was embarrassed. And then I was like, oh, gosh, yeah, I guess. And I go, one day you'll understand. He goes, Dad, that's not making it any better. I went, fair. It's fair. I didn't even think about it. Never even thought about it.
Oh, man.
So there you go. But the hoops were great.
The hockey was
fun.
The two goals. Who scored on the Islanders twice in like 30 seconds?
Canes. Yeah. And then LeBron last night.
Crying.
Let me ask you this. Does he ever win another playoff series? Now, he's age 40.
Series.
And he was great. Anthony Davis was great. They played as perfectly as you can play it in the first two games, and they lost them both. They were up 20 in the third in the game last night, and Denver got them. Denver's way too good, way too deep. They have no chance in hell. It reminded me very much of the J.R. Smith at the end of game one of the finals here, where it was like LeBron put all of that into it, and it was like if they had won that game, they had a puncher's chance.
Yep.
If L.A. would have won one of the two games in Denver, they put all in it,
yep.
But they didn't. Now I think it's over in four or five, and it's cooked. Be shocked if it gets to five games, honestly. I think they're probably going to get swept. Because it feels like at any point Denver can go on a 15-0 run in their sleep.
Yeah.
But Jamal Murray hit a shot over Anthony Davis. It was, I mean, it's a contested shot. He just hit a shot. But I'm curious, like, do you think he ever wins another series? He's 40.
Series, yes.
How?
That team is not
great. I think if he...
Great.
I don't know.
Two stars.
I don't know that he wins one with the Lakers.
Okay, so this is why I don't think he's going to win one, because I don't think he can ever leave there.
You know, he's going to come home?
No.
For one last run?
I don't. He's 40.
It'd be great.
He's 40. I would love it, obviously. And if you put him on this team with the rest of these guys, if he were to come without having to give anything up, yeah. I mean, that would be crazy. But at the same time, like, he's going to live the rest of his life in Los Angeles. I don't think that he can bail. He's basically put them in this situation that they're in. With the roster that it is.
He's not a great GM.
He forced the Anthony Davis thing when they didn't need to. They gave up all those assets.
He's not a great
GM. They could have waited.
Yep.
You know, until he became a true free agent. They didn't. So it's like, I mean, they had Brandon Ingram was in that trade. All those first round picks were in that deal.
Yep.
Like, they could have just held firm and waited. They didn't. And I just don't know. Like, he's lived the rest of his life in Los Angeles. Can he really leave the Lakers? I don't think he can.
I think the only place he could leave the Lakers for is here.
And then go back to L.A.? Not if he wants to be like a Laker legend.
Does he want to be a Laker legend?
I think it matters. Yeah, sure. He's never going to be Kobe Magic.
What's his Lakers resume?
He won a title, and they've been relevant for
years. Didn't he only win the title in the bubble?
Yes.
It's still a title. They hung a banner. What are you? That sounds like a Gibby look out of you.
It's not a Gibby. That was...
I like it.
It was several seven-game series.
They won them.
Of course, Z twice
it was
on
under the rules
night.
Of the time, but it was that felt very not like an NBA playoffs.
Well, if you're going to do that, though, then you almost have to do that with all of the things that were contested at that time.
Yeah, but at least you had people, some number of. Now, in our game in Pittsburgh, which felt very weird.
They had people in some of the people in the finals. They brought in people for the finals, remember? There was
like how many?
I don't know, a couple hundred people. But that was the whole time. So if you do that, then the Dodgers didn't win the World Series. The Lakers didn't win the NBA. I don't even remember who won the NHL that year because they did a bubble, too.
Yeah.
Because the NHL went to Toronto and Edmonton.
I'm just saying,
bubbles.
It's still.
By the way, how wild is that?
It counts.
That was the world we lived in.
It counts.
Sports leagues went to a
crazy
bubble.
Yeah. It counts. It's just not.
Well, I think
he
that's
didn't get
why
to win. He's never won a banner playing in their
He never even got a parade. They didn't get a parade.
Yeah.
Because it was still COVID.
Has he made it to the finals since?
No.
No, so he's never been in the finals as a Laker.
He was in Western Staples Conference Center. Final last year against Denver.
They went on a run.
But he's never been. Yeah, it's tough.
So his Laker legacy.
That's what I mean. I don't think
nothing,
he can leave
so
there.
I think he can. I don't think he's leaving anything behind.
Oof. I think he's going to live the rest of his life there, and I think
he's not even close to Magic.
He's
not even James Worthy to the Lakers.
I don't know. I don't know if that's our old bias or if they're recently. I don't know. I mean, Worthy was my guy, but I don't know. I don't know how he broke the NBA all-time scoring record there. Like, you got to remember, they were drifting on nothing.
Because sure.
Coming out of Kobe until he went there, they were wayward a long time. So he's made them fun and relevant over the time that he's been there.
I think it's crazier to be as bad as they are now with him and Anthony Davis. That's tough. I don't know. I just don't think his Lakers.
Either way, so the only way he would do it, he'd have to leave like after this year. And that would be it.
Well,
I would too. It'd be great to have him. I guarantee you wouldn't be playing.
Would you welcome him back?
Of course he would. You would not be playing on NBA TV at 7 o'clock.
Well, there you go.
With LeBron James, to bring it full circle. Yeah.
Would you draft? I'd draft Bronny if he needed to.
No.
I hope for the kid's sake that doesn't happen.
No.
Like, would you want your father, 18-year-old, with the yoke of Pedro overlooking everything you did in first year as a professional?
Later on in the show, by the way, on the rundown, we're going to talk about father and son relationships, because I believe the Harrison family might have a little toxic relationship going on.
Oh, okay. There's a little tease for what's to come.
These NBA teams that go, 13 deep? Do they go? Is it 13?
Yeah, but they only play 7.
Exactly. So you want to? Who cares if he's the 13th guy on your team? You have dudes who sit every single game.
No. I'm saying from the kid's perspective.
I don't know that he's getting into the NBA any otherwise.
No, I don't know, but I don't know that he needs to. Like, he's obviously more than taken care of. I'm sure he wants to, but like,
make some layups.
Yeah, I don't know that you want. I don't know that I would want to share a locker room with my father.
Correct.
Like, we all think of the Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Sr. thing. Like, that's the one that we think of.
That's the Nirvana.
Yeah. But there's a lot to that,
too. Of course.
Yeah. What the hell happened to you, Uno? This
Seriously.
Is sad.
It's sad. It's a disgrace is what it is.
Is there controversy?
No. They fell apart mentally when going got tough.
Yeah,
were you there?
No, this is my synopsis.
Oh.
I don't think any controversy.
I've been given a blow-by-blow.
It was a really good game.
What was the score at halftime?
29-12.
And you lost.
Good guys?
Good guys.
Yeah. It was just not our second half. We just lost all the momentum.
Turnovers.
Really quickly. Yeah.
Turnovers. They had a turnover on downs.
The turnover
they
on downs.
They had the ball at the 7 with no timeouts left at the opponent's 7 with 7 seconds to go with a score to win the game. And unfortunately, for some reason, they got checked it down to the 6, got tackled, and the clock right now. They didn't even throw it in the end zone. So I just think they got.
You blew it, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Uno.
Not
this
good.
Was the rival, and you can have it, but you have it by the throat. 29-12,
and you had a 2-point conversion to tie in overtime. I didn't hear that part. What happened on that play?
We just threw an incompletion. Just couldn't get anybody open, and Corey had to force something because he was under pressure, and we just couldn't get open for him. So
you're up 29-12. Did they begin the second half with the ball?
I believe that they did,
and then they scored.
So, yeah, so 29-19.
What really killed us was they cut it to 8 on a long touchdown.
Quick drive.
And then stopped us on the 4-and-out, and that flipped the whole game. That was the moment where you could start to feel that they knew that they could win it because they were about to go on a 16-point swing, and then they did.
All right. We have two principals on this program who witnessed it. Gibbe, did they blow it?
So I only got to see the first half.
Okay.
Because we had.
Was Griff there for the full thing?
Huh?
Did Griff go
for
the whole game?
So, first half,
when
you left at halftime, Gibby, you were like, oh, it's done.
I felt really good about it. I was like, they had forced 2 turnover on downs, and Corey had an interception in the end zone. I'm like, they're cruising. All they got to do now is just go score for score with them. Like, because it's flag football, which means you're basically playing glorified arena football league rules. It's score, 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 score. So as long as you keep scoring, everything will be fine. So about 7:30, I'm like, I haven't heard anything. I sent a text. I'm like, I don't feel good about this that I haven't heard anything. Like, we should be raising banners. I should be getting a text where the party's at tonight. Nothing. And they look good. They were cruising on all cylinders. I think when you play a co-ed flag football league,
sure,
it comes down to the female play, and they had two outstanding females on their team.
Why is that? Because you have to guard. You have to play.
Their touchdowns are worth more.
Oh, their touchdowns are worth more?
Yeah.
Oh, baby.
And you have to go to them every three plays. They have to be involved.
Gosh. If you have female, like both teams last night, probably they might have the best females in the building from a player standpoint.
Well, that would do it. That's all you need.
That's what you need.
Yeah.
My in college, what I would do, there was a intramural men's, and then there was intramural co-ed basketball.
Yep.
And the co-ed basketball, my freshman year, I was dating a girl on the basketball team, and the divorce was amicable, and so for the rest of my college run, every girls basketball player that redshirted played on my intramural team.
That's right.
Just hung banners. Because same thing. They're twos are worth threes, or threes are worth fours.
Yep.
You just, and the girls, they don't miss.
Correct.
No, they're very skilled.
Easy, 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 easy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm heartbroken.
It was
it's devastating.
You're
only lost in the game. Only lost the season.
07 yeah. Patriots.
It was 07. That's what we said after the
you
game.
You guys got
we
beaten
like,
by plastic bursts.
Oh.
David Tyree got us.
David Tyree
when
got
it mattered
you.
The most.
And this had become your stat line, 2 for 30.
Yeah, it's just the classic.
Really, that's the classic Uno classic stat line. Uno.
One in front of the fans, one they were gone.
So how many touchdowns did you finish with? You scored in the first week.
I scored three touchdowns on the season.
Yeah.
And two were the first game,
Say with your sprinting prowess, that is an underachieving season for you.
It feels like Deshaun Jackson
maybe you were used,
properly utilized.
That's it. I don't know that you were used correctly.
I was able to evaluate the talent in person last night.
Oh, God.
Go.
Here we go.
My piece of advice is,
okay,
the quarterback was looking at you.
QB looking.
You were busy running the route and not looking at the quarterback.
So, well, now that's an anti-NFL view because his – so you're telling me that
you
their situation
– eyes on the
you want him to have his eyes on the quarterback?
What I'm seeing is this. Uno, because you guys had told him earlier in the year, run the long routes.
Yeah, yeah.
You're
no,
the
we said drags.
Crossers,
drags.
Crossers, drags, deeps.
But the way their team played wasn't necessarily that. If he goes 6 yards and just turns around, he's wide open and no one's within five yards of him.
Are you given a route to run every snap? Oh, it's just freewheeling? Oh, my gosh.
My one piece of advice is find the open area and just sit down in it for flag football.
Here's all right.
We ran one play, by the way, the whole season, and it was in overtime to tie it or to get within tying. It was the first play. Right. We ran a screen pass to Riley, only play we drew up.
You and I should have coached this.
Yes. You got to have
Some plays. You got to have some sort of hand signals.
Yes, of course.
You got to have some routes. Live in a – like, even, like, my kids, like, they run – they have a huddle or they signal routes.
When
like
I was in the
– you have to –
in Georgia, and we were making our runs
when you
to
probably
the States,
played here, you probably
– I had plays, but I had, like, when we went – had I had, like, a flippable –
sure.
I had probably 40 – we had 40 plays.
Yeah. The very least, I got to know what routes you're running.
Of course.
I can't be in a situation where I'm just waiting for you to stop
running.
Try to
anticipate.
Anticipate the route.
Yeah, let's mind meld.
Okay, so now I think this league needs an overhaul.
Yeah.
That's what my takeaway from this is, that we've got to have some
I think
some
things are going to be changing for the next season.
Apparently there's one other thing that I'd like to say.
Go ahead.
Oh, man.
This is a flag football league.
Uh-oh, yep. Here we go.
Okay.
Here comes Soapbox Gibby. Here we go.
No. There's a lot – the intensity for a flag football game.
Yeah.
I understand the magnitude, that there's a championship at stake.
Sure.
There is a trophy, as I found out last
night. Okay.
You're not playing in the Super Bowl.
Oh, I disagree already.
This is if you're a competitor, and you have a lot of ex-college athletes, this is where they get to compete,
NFL
and
building,
it's an NFL building.
You're in a facility.
This
I
is exactly why, since I ripped intense. And shredded my ACL and MCL, I'm like,
you're
I don't
out.
Need to play.
You're
I don't
out.
Need
I'm
to
done.
Deal with this.
I'm done.
Too intense. It can't be too intense in a competitive situation.
Yes, yes, so. You can. Actually, you can
Not
be.
For a chipper.
I believe Dan Murphy still has some scars from, like, a cleat where he got cleated in the back.
Well,
no
that's
names, please.
Violence. That's not
well, that was
competitive nature.
But yeah. 100% that was a in competitive nature.
Well, it's not ballet. It's not
yeah,
black
gonna,
ballet.
I am aware. I but think, how do you have a mark up your back?
This happened last night?
No.
Oh,
wait,
years
who
ago.
Marked? Who marked Murph?
Oh,
who marked Murph?
No names, please.
So Murph was on the ground and this person stepped on him?
Basically tackled in flag football.
Well, like, and that's too much.
And I think we're getting there were moments
you
last
you have
night.
To play by the rules the of the game. There should be officiating. How
there
many
were officials.
How many flags do you wear? Is it two or three?
Two flags.
So, okay. One thing I would say that if you want to eliminate any sort of physicality in it or the most you can, you got to go to a three-flag system because then you won't have
one,
two and then one in the back. Then
not in the front.
New.
No.
Then you get the Giot comment from my son. No, you've got to have it in the back, and I think you've got to have then that eliminates any sort of like trying to grab to slow to grab a flag. Are the flags adhered by Velcro or pops?
Pops.
The one thing that's tough on that is sometimes people will wrap the pop to make it harder
it's
to pull.
Illegal.
It's illegal, but it's hard to pay attention to.
Oh, I'm on it.
I think I'm a fan of Velcro flags. Those are the best ones,
fall
I think.
Off sometimes, though.
Yeah, but then just get the new one. I mean, that's just because of wear and tear.
It's
but
old
like,
Velcro.
I almost feel like every year if you get a new set of Velcro, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it.
I like it.
Yeah. All right. I think we've covered a lot. Next level is next. Kidding. We have a uniform drop. Oh, baby, do we. What are we doing?
The good news for them, though, is that they've got third locked up. Like they're
we'll get into it.
They might even be second for a couple of their things, so we can make some cases.
I will just say this about it. I've never seen anything quite like it.
The H-Town is such a debacle.
We'll get to it coming up next. We're off and running. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN, Cleveland.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more, with a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
The Rolling Stones, Hackney Diamond Sewer, Saturday, June 15th, Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit ClevelandBrownsStadium.com/Rolling Stones for more information on that. So the full range of these uniforms, there's been parts of them that have leaked out from Houston for a while, but the full range was actually accidentally leaked last night on Detroit television. Did you guys see this?
I did not.
So they're setting up for the draft up there, and they were like doing a live shot of like how the setting up is going. And the camera panned on a live shot and shot the full set because they have them set up there.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's how it happened. I think once – it's just stupefying to me that the Adams family owns light blue in the NFL. I don't understand it.
Well, they don't. The Chargers have a nice light blue.
I understand it. And even this H-Town blue isn't Oilers blue. It's slightly darker. But they could not apparently wear a light blue jersey. And in fact, the word? Well, I'm doing the reading on this right now. Like, University of Houston, remember, they wore those last year. And then this Adams family shut those down and said no. I don't necessarily understand if the Houston Chronicle's got a story on it about why this happened this way. I understand, like, she does not want to give. I don't understand why she doesn't. NFL should step in and just give them the Oilers if they would have wanted it. But apparently, and I'm just catching up on all of this.
So the Texans knew that this was going to be ill-received and then put out it to seems like the it. Media.
Yeah.
Look, this is.
So this is John Lopez, who does sports down there in Houston, okay. Sports Talk Radio. He says, don't get it twisted. Amy Adams Strunk is pretty uncompromising, is a petty, uncompromising conniver. She lurks. She's obsessed with all things Houston for reasons that don't make a lot of sense. She's vindictive. She's bitter. Just like her dad, she could have been a hero in Houston. She could have erased bad memories in her hometown by just holding on to an old grudge. Instead, she is today what she's always been, her father's daughter. Yes, this is uniform related, and I will explain. And then they link to a Houston Chronicle story about how the NFL steps in to stop any sort of view of it. So what I knew that there was a lot of that, and they're very specific about it, about owning the Oilers. I knew that part. I knew that there was pettiness and bitterness dating back to him not getting a new stadium, Bud Adams when he left and went to Nashville, all of those things I knew. But I did not understand. My hunch is that the Texans must have went so far. That's why they don't have a light blue jersey. My thinking was that if they went with a navy helmet, they'd be okay. But they didn't even go with a light blue jersey. It's piping only. Honestly, the crazy thing about the third one, the alternate one that is the H-Town blue, they really look like the Titans. Because they have a navy blue hat, and they have light blue pinstriping, and they have red. They actually look more like the Titans than the Oilers.
Okay, they're terrible. Let me try to understand. We're suggesting that they could not have put together a uniform that was as follows. A white helmet,
yeah,
with the Texans' current logo,
yeah,
with the part that is navy on the current logo,
yep,
being
light
this
blue.
H-Town
that light
this
blue.
This blue that not, they are using right
that
now.
That H-Town blue, yeah.
Okay, so white lid, that striping, that their current logo, but with that part that's navy,
sure,
in the H-Town blue. A white uniform.
Okay.
H-Town blue numbers and name.
Yep.
White pants. H-Town blue stripe with probably red. Red and H-Town blue in the middle.
Yeah.
Like red, white, H-Town blue, white, red. Striping. Why can't H-Town blue face mask on the white lid.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they do that?
I'm not going to act like I'm the authority on this. Absolutely.
Doesn't that feel like it appears better?
Of course
compromise?
It's better. This is a total fail. But it's the thing I don't understand. I would have done something like that, but all of the reading that I'm doing on this, it appears that they wanted to be nowhere near it, and they didn't, because this doesn't have any in it at all.
It's terrible.
It's awful. That one is brutal.
I happen to think their whites are pretty good.
I think that's the best of the group.
Yeah. Agreed.
So the other thing I've never seen before is three uniforms, of which none are linked. Every single one of them is different. They're not a uniform.
Right.
The white one has the horns on it, and it's pretty clean. I actually think the white one with the blue is pretty good. Then the home one has the logo on the sleeve. Then they have the red one, which I actually think the red helmet's pretty cool with
very
the horns.
Nice.
I actually like that. I think like only it'd be like the Eagles and the Vikings, the only ones that have that kind of look. I guess the Rams do. But like I think like a longhorn horn on the side is kind of cool on the red one.
Agreed.
And I don't know why you couldn't just have that be the whole uniform look, but they didn't. So they really have four different uniforms.
Yes.
There's not another situation like that in the league where there's no uniformity in the uniform.
No, because you're saying.
I'm saying none of them are the same. The white one has a different shoulder stripe than the blue and the red and the H-Town blue. It's three different uniforms.
Yeah.
There's no uniformity.
What's the stripe on the red?
It's just two stripes.
And so on the
it's not the horns.
On the blue it's a horn. I mean on the white
on
it's
the
a
blue
horn.
It's the logo.
And on the blue
on
it's
the white
logo.
It's a horn. On the red it's two stripes. They're not none of them are the same.
Nothing on H-Town.
No, it's four different jerseys.
Yeah, that is wild.
I've never seen that before. Not just in the NFL, but college anywhere.
I happen to think the whites look very good. I happen to think the reds look very good. I really like the red a lot. I happen to think that the blues actually look pretty good too. The Navy. I just think the H-Town is such an absolute fail. Such an absolute fail. And I realize, and maybe they're hindered, limited, whatever the case may be. If they're able to get that color involved,
why couldn't they make the jersey that color?
Right. Of course.
If you have to wear a blue helmet, wear a blue helmet. I actually think it would look pretty cool.
Why do they have to wear a blue helmet? Why can't they wear
no
a white
clue.
Helmet?
I have no clue. I don't know. It's so crazy how this protection of the Oilers.
They should have a white lid anyway.
Of course their lid should be white over the blue.
Yes.
100%. I actually think you could have done like the red helmet as a primary and had all of the colors in that if you wanted to. It's a very strange thing. I've never seen this before. They don't have like a classic uniform because they don't own the Oilers. So there's nothing like you can go back to and go, that's the way they should look because they don't have it.
Even the logo that they have on the shoulder of the H-Town Blue, if you put a white hat and threw that logo on, I think that would have been fine. You didn't maybe need to do the whole thing in that blue, but that right there, if that was on the helmet, if it was a white lid, that on the helmet.
Yes.
With the, I think that would have been fine.
Yeah.
And then a white jersey.
Yes. They don't need another navy.
No. It needed to be a white jersey with the
if you couldn't do the light
blue.
Yeah.
Or with the H. But they're allowed to have this H-Town Blue and somehow associated with the uniform. I don't know.
It's wild. It's a wild thing to do. And
Roger
honestly,
Goodell should be like, no.
The H looks like a baseball H
it's
to
terrible.
Me. It's what it looks
it's
like.
Awful. The H is horrific.
Yeah. No, I think it's pretty bombed. So they're calling it Candy Blue. They have all sorts of different numbers they're trying to or that they can go with this blue. I don't understand it. I don't know. The white one's the best, I think, for sure. The traditional uniform is it just looks plain them. I don't understand how the Adams family owns light blue in Houston.
It's ridiculous.
Like, would they have put in something in there? Like, that'd be like if the NFL allowed Modell to have the power to say, you can have a new team in Cleveland, but you can't use orange and brown. What?
It doesn't make any
sense. You own colors? I understand you own shades of colors, sure, but there's a bunch of shades of light blue.
Well, yeah, they're calling this a different blue.
It's a different blue.
All right. I think jersey rankings of the four drafts.
So we have all four out.
Yep. I'd say Lions number one.
By a mile. Lions are my favorite. Well, Jets are fine, but I think the Lions. Just,
Lions won.
The Lions did everything you should do in a uniform set.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Modern version of a traditional, right? Looks the part, looks exactly like the Lions. An old school throwback, and then one that you're trying something fresh. Love it.
The black with the blue.
Crushed it.
Which is beautiful. Yep.
Crushed it.
The Jets, solid. Modern
Very
take
solid.
On the sack exchange.
Disappointed, no Namath, but fine.
Beautiful black. Namath should be a one-off.
Yep.
Texans, I have third, and there's a gap between one and two, a gap between two and three, because I like three of their uniforms a lot. I really like the red with that. I kind of think
I just
should,
think
that
should
be
it.
Their helmet.
I agree. I think that helmet's actually cool with the horn on it. Just have that red helmet with the horn on it as the logo, and do that. Do the red one, a white one, and the H-Town blue. Do those three.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. And then fourth.
So here's the
is
deal.
Denver. But the problem is with Denver, if it was the
they
throwbacks.
Have one that's perfect.
If that was what they did, then, they'd be right at the top with the Lions.
Yeah. Then you'd be perfect if they'd done that.
Their regular ones are horrific.
Can you imagine, like, and you went through it twice with us, like the process with the Texans where you end up with four different looks?
I mean, that I've
that's,
never.
I've
heard
never,
of. Never.
College, pro, anything. I've never seen that.
That's like Oregon.
But that's all the same template. The jersey's the same. It's just different variations of the
colors.
Color. The striping's the same. You don't. I've never seen
different striping, different shoulders.
Yeah, I've never seen that like that before. All right, now a couple other things around the league. Andy Reid gets paid, highest paid coach in the league. Brent Veach gets taken care of as well. President Mark Donovan. The Chiefs have won a lot, and so those riches will
That's
be shared
yeah.
amongst that. Matt Ryan officially announces retirement as a Falcon, so that happened as well. They want to know, does he have a Hall of Fame case? I don't think. MVP, which is tough, because he did win the MVP. But no, I don't think so, would be my guess. I'm thinking the thing that's going to happen with these quarterbacks, let me pose this to you. How are we going to statistically put these quarterbacks in this era into perspective?
It's going to be tough, but you're going to have to judge them based on what they were versus their peers. Right? I mean, that to
That's
me...
That's what I would say.
MVP means that at least for 1 year, he was the best. So that carries a little weight. Four-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's only a four-time Pro Bowler. Like, that's wild to me. Never led the league in passing, never led the league in passing touchdowns. His best year, 2016, though, he was the MVP. Quarterback rating of 117, 4,944 yards, 38 touchdowns, 7 picks. I mean, he's very good. 66% passing, 381 touchdowns, 183 picks, career rating of 93.6.
Ryan or Stafford?
I think Stafford.
Stafford, just a two-time Pro Bowler.
That's wild.
Isn't that something?
He won a Super Bowl.
He did.
So this Pro Football Reference Hall of Fame monitor has him, average Hall of Fame quarterback's 103. It has him at 106, which means they think that he would get, according to their little thing, he would get in.
Mm.
So this is what they do. For quarterbacks, Super Bowl losses times 1.25. The player debuted in 1980 or later. Any passing yards over 40,000 get minimized. Passing touchdowns over 250 get minimized. If they debuted before, it's stuff over, you had to be over 25,000. So they did. They have changed it.
So Stafford's only a 79 on that list.
On that, that's his hall. So mm-hmm. then Matt Ryan would be, I think, is empirically better.
Yeah. So they, like, just so people have an understanding, you said he's 106. Is what you said on that?
Yeah, that profile. The Hall of Fame monitor.
Yeah, Brady's 263, Manning's 257, Rogers 192, Steve Young 111.
106 is like 12th.
106 is 12th. It's 108's the average Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yep.
And then Roethlisberger's 100, Phillip Rivers, and so forth. But then they have those guys who are old school guys like Bart Starr, Bradshaw, all those guys. So that's what makes it a little tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. He was great that one year. Like, if they had just gone with Kyle right away there, like, how many does he stack?
Stafford, I would – see, I just wouldn't have had Stafford being no-time All-Pro, not even a second team. Matt Ryan does have a better career from that regard.
Well, he's got that MVP, which gives him that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is what is a little odd that Stafford didn't have more Pro Bowls.
It is
surprised he didn't have more Pro Bowls.
And he's 10 games under 500 for his career.
Yeah. A lot of Detroit, bad.
So, Matt Ryan, 124 and 109. I'm curious to see where, like, Phillip Rivers comes out on this. Because those are
Phillip
the ones.
Rivers is 98.06.
So, Matt Ryan is considerably better in their
guys.
Estimation.
Yes, correct. Yep. Speaking of quarterbacks, the Bengals bringing back exclusive rights free agent Jake Browning. So, you have that as well. He will back them up. He's very competent in that.
He was
forward.
Great last year.
All right, coming up next. AB coming up next with Z. You have that to look forward to. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Hey, Bo here for my great friends at the James B. Beam Distilling Company. Some say that rye whiskey is having a moment. Overholt has been having a moment for over 200 years. The legacy continues today with A. Overholt. The latest chapter in their ever-evolving story of American rye. Taste what two centuries of experience can make with a robust Pennsylvania-style rye whiskey. The newest thing in rye is also the oldest thing in rye. It is available now. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. 2 days from the NFL draft, here's Z with our boss man, Andrew Berry.
What a treat. Before the Browns set to pick some players here in 2024, we are joined by the general manager of your Cleveland Browns, Andrew Berry. AB, good to be with you.
Good to be with you too, Nate. Thanks for having me, man.
It is an absolute joy. It is a treat to have you. We have to do this every year kind of prior to the draft. And next year when we do it, we'll get to maybe even talk about a first-round pick. But
we'll see.
This year, maybe a second-round pick because we haven't picked in the second round in either of the last two seasons.
That's correct.
Either. Where's kind of your mindset with that second-round pick? Because it's a position where you really can move. You've moved up and gotten guys like JOK. You've moved down and still gotten guys like MJ Emerson. What's kind of your mindset with that second-round pick?
Yeah, I think our mindset is just flexibility. We have a number of players that we think will be potentially available at the spot, but we really won't know until we get to Friday night. And depending on how the board falls on Friday,
sure.
we'll determine if we move up, we sit or pick, sit and pick, or if we move back. So it's hard for me to give anything definitive today, but we'll have a better sense.
But that's the mindset that we can. Maybe somebody's going to fall to us. Maybe we can get aggressive like we do at JOK, or we can chill. We're not going to get so aggressive though that we end up on Thursday.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty unlikely at this point. I would be surprised if that happened. So
you would know better than most.
So I learned never to say never.
For sure, never to say never. All right, when you look at this roster, and you and I got to talk about this a couple days ago, but I mean, you could make, I think, a pretty darn complete 53 right now. And in fact, with some competition from 53 through, call it 59, to make this football team. And yet, you're going to go out there and pick in the second round, the third, the fifth, couple in the sixth, couple in the seventh. What's kind of your mindset with these picks? Because the days are long gone of, we need a starter at left tackle. We need a starter at Mike linebacker. It's more kind of filling in and then thinking probably about the future.
Yeah, it's definitely more future, or I should say it's more long-term focused.
Okay.
We look at the draft as being investing in the long-term health of the roster, long-term investment at certain positions. And so as we go into it, it really is without a ton of consideration to where we sit today, because once we get into the season, you get surprises in both directions, whether guys, they take the leap, whether guys, get hurt, they age out, or just things go differently than you expect. So we are pleased with where the roster sits today, but nobody really knows. And so, we'll look to really build the best, 90-man roster that we can, with the long-term health of our team in mind and attack it that way.
How long did it take you in this role, and I'm guessing because you're you, this happened much earlier in your career, but one of the things that when I first came into the Browns organization, you got to training camp, and you have in your mind that everybody who did something good the year before, like, that's going to continue and never change, right? All the good is good, and then we're just going to fix the bad, and then everything's going to work out. Well, as you mentioned, that's not the reality. How long did it take you to kind of realize that just because somebody was good a year ago, that doesn't mean their trajectory stays the exact same, and you have to think about all of those contingencies?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that Bill Polian actually said, in a different way. He would talk about, your needs today aren't the same as your needs tomorrow, and that was maybe like a broader comment in terms of the roster, but it's something that he would always make his staff aware of at an early point in my career. So that really always stuck with me. And then as you have, more cycles and more seasons under your belt, like, you do realize that you'd like to think it's just, hey, you leave off right where you were at the end of last year, but that's just not the reality of the sport.
What did it say to you? Because not only are you trying to build a great team here, I know how important it is that you're trying to build a great culture, which facilitates, I think, and lifts up a great team. And I think you've done that, talking to the guys, just how much they love being in that locker room. What was it like to have a free agency period where everybody wanted to come back?
I mean, it's always something it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
You can't always bring everybody back, obviously. But we had a good group that enjoyed being around one another, that, most importantly, played well together. And some level of continuity is good, especially in team sports where guys learn how to play together. And specifically, you hope that you're a young team that, like, grows together. That was pretty cool to see this past offseason. We obviously did bring a lot of guys back. I can't say that was like the primary, driving factor for our motivation for, our offseason moves. But, we are excited to have the nucleus still in place.
When you have guys who have played at a high level, like a Za'Darius Smith and Shelby and even a guy like Mo Hurst, who's been in the league a while, or Rodney McLeod, who's been a Super Bowl champion, played at a high level in various stops along the way. When guys who have been around the league and seen other locker rooms and been a part of other cultures and other teams that have had success, but they're like, no, this is where I want to be. Does that, at least maybe in the back of your mind, say, we're doing something right in terms of what we're trying to build from a culture standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think you always want to have positive feedback from your players, but I think probably the biggest proof in the pudding is winning at the end of the day, because that's really our primary goal. And certainly how you come together as a team plays a role in that. But at the same time, like, we don't want to have a good culture and not lose a bunch of games. So sure. That's really what's at the forefront of our minds.
Yeah, and hopefully that, as we say, kind of buoys everything there. We talked about the roster offseason. If you want to talk about some of the additions, anybody that kind of jumped out to you that you were very excited to add in, I can tell you from the people I talked to, Jordan Hicks was a really impressive guy.
So Jordan, he fills a similar role to what Anthony Walker did for us a number of years ago. Jordan, he's a seasoned, experienced, Mike linebacker for us. He knows the ins and outs of the particular scheme that we run. Jim crossed over with him in Philly. He was leaving when I was going in Philly, but he made his lasting imprint. And he's just an athletic, instinctive linebacker. That's what we call like the chief fix-it officer on the field.
Yep.
He's so sharp cerebrally, and then provides leadership along the way that we felt like he was a really nice veteran to supplement our defense.
So you added him kind of as the big piece there defensively. Offensively, it was the trade once again. Jerry Jeudy comes in, a first-round talent, great route runner, separator. I know that's one of the things you like about him. How did that present itself? I know you guys were kind of on the trail for a little while, and then how do you see him kind of fitting in?
Yeah, I think with Jerry, he's a player who's got speed, separation ability. He can create with the ball in his hands, and then he can play outside and inside. So he allows you offensively to create mismatch in a diverse set of ways, along with complementing the rest of our skill group. And really how it came about was largely how all these things come about. We're pretty active in the trade market. We're constantly making calls, constantly doing research. Be honest, like going into the combine, that wasn't really on our radar, although we knew it, in maybe past offseason, something that we at least checked in on. But it really wasn't on our radar going into the combine. So it came together, I'd say, relatively quickly, once we knew that there was a potential for him to be available. And it was just the right fit for us and was the right fit for Denver, and we're glad he's here.
Can you give us a little peek behind the curtain? Like, how does that happen? Are you out at St. Elmo's and in comes, from Denver, and they're like, hey, he's still interested in Jeudy?
It really ends up becoming a function of, regular trade calls I make, or the combine's easy because everyone's in one spot.
Sure.
It may be, part of conversations. Usually when the workouts are going between breaks, teams or GMs are going to each other's suites and everything just to talk roster. And so I think we were actually right next to Denver during the combine. So it just came up with that, just with conversation with George.
So all of a sudden, then you're like, okay, all right, I'm happy. I'm interested.
Yeah, do a little bit of work with it.
Yeah, yep. And then here Jerry Jeudy is. So that's exciting. Listen, it's a weapons league, and you've talked about how you're so focused on the trenches, but also very cognizant of the fact that weapons are needed. You go get him. You've invested some draft picks and receivers as well. What can you tell us about David Bell, who I thought played very well against Cincinnati in that season finale, and then Cedric Tillman, a couple of third-rounders from the last few years?
Yeah, so David, David, our staff calls him Mr. Reliable. He's probably, especially in this offense, where we'll probably see an expansion of the use of choice routes. He's very smart, good decision maker with those, and has very reliable hands. So he's a little bit like a quarterback's, safety blanket. Said, bigger body receiver who's a really good separator, and has strong hands. I think we all saw him take off in the second half of last year. So we're really excited about him and what he can add to the offense and that group in general, just because when we build our skill group, we want skill sets that complement one another. Sure, we'd love to have, an Amari Cooper who can really kind of do a little bit of everything. But absent using, high amount of resources on the position, we really look more for specific skill sets that can do specific roles within the offense.
So that's kind of your receiver room. I feel pretty good about it now with Amari, Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore, the two young guys, and some more, I'm sure, who are going to be competing as it goes on.
Yeah, we do feel good about that group. It's got to play out. We believe in having as much competition across the different rooms as possible, but we do feel like we have a number of individuals that bring something unique to the table.
When you kind of go into a draft and you think of, you talked about earlier, our top assets, right? You kind of like to classify those top assets into certain positions, not classify, but to kind of their groupings of positions that are worthy of that asset due to because of salaries and things of that nature. What's kind of just big picture wise, what are kind of them in your mind, the most important positions for top level assets in the draft or even, in a trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think people know we're a quarterback centric organization. It's the most important position in sports. I think people know that we like linemen. Like, I don't think that's a secret. And then, you know, really positions that influence the passing game. You know, that's really our priority. Now, we don't operate exclusively in that manner. And you have to be able to be, you know, flexible just because you can't dictate or control the draft. But over the long run, you'll probably see our investment in those areas.
Speaking of the quarterback, how's Deshaun doing? I've heard he's feeling good, looking good, and it seems very positive for right now.
Deshaun's doing well. He's progressing appropriately in his rehab. He's continues to ramp up his throwing progression. We're all very pleased with what we've seen in terms of his recovery to date, and we'll continue to take it week by week.
I want to ask you about the running back room, and you can throw a sprinkle a Nick Chubb update in there while you do it. But, you know, I like Pierre Strong a lot. I think he's got a little bit of juice. Jerome had a tremendous year for us as well. You bring in a Deontay Foreman, who, I looked this up, he had 11 games in his career. He's gotten 20 or more carries. He's run for more than 100 yards in 7 of them. So you big, strong, physical back and kind of do kind of some of those short yardage things. And then you add in Nyheim Hines, who can return kicks, but also speed, catches the ball in the backfield, all of that. When you kind of look at that room, are you happy with where that is right now? Because you've got a mix of veterans and young guys, or is that a room as well that, you know, you want to think about this year and beyond?
I'd say every room we think about this year and beyond. Sure. But as it sits here today, we were pleased with the performance that we got out of that room last year. I think we were able to sprinkle in some additional skill sets. And I've mentioned, I think the running back position is it's more of a platoon position in today's game. And you know, we certainly feel like we have the skill sets there currently. That's not to say that we won't add between now and, you know, the September opener. But we like the guys that we have to date.
All right, let's talk about your draft board. When do you say, all right, enough's enough? We cannot chase ghosts. No more analysis. The board is set. Have we reached that point?
No, it's at that point.
Okay.
It's really more thinking through strategy at this point. Usually the board's probably set 2 weeks out before the draft, absent any, you know, unique or special information, you know, coming in. And then really the last 2 weeks, it's scenario planning and strategy.
The simulations, which are, you guys like to do those, right?
We do. We do. We run through a number of different simulations just to maybe stress test, you know, what our preferences are at different picks and, you know, what we would do if presented with different trade scenarios, because it's a little bit like when we're in the fall and the team practices base downs, third down, red zone, short yardage, goal line, 2 minute throughout the week to be prepared for the upcoming opponent.
Sure.
It's no different for us that the first time you don't want to react to a set of scenarios is when you're on the clock. Because at that point, when you get to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's really about execution.
In that, once your board's kind of set, and you can talk as much or as little as you want about this, but I know part of it is kind of, there is some information sharing where you're able to kind of gauge what's maybe the perception of a guy that you like or maybe don't like. Perhaps it's putting that out there as well, but how does that really kind of work? And is it a certain group of people you trust you that you guys are able to kind of look at things in the same way?
You know, most of our talks are stay internal. You know, that's not to say that, you know, if you have a like mentor like Howie or you know, a friend like Kwesi, where you may bounce something off of them when you know you're not maybe in the same market for a specific position. But most of the work is really done internally.
How excited are you for this? Because I know you're probably like, hurry up, let's get it going.
It's definitely been hurry up and wait time for a little bit, so we're kind of ready to go. We've spent enough time, you know, talking through scenarios and talking through prospects that, you know, we're ready to go this weekend. But it's also nice that this is kind of a slow week. We'll do a couple more, you know, sessions of scenario planning. Our scouts are in, which is always great to see them. But we are ready to go.
In those scenarios, do you ever let somebody else be the one that has to make that decision just to kind of see how they handle those type of situations?
Less so in like a formal aspect. Like usually we'll have the group make the selection if we run through like a simulation rather than me saying who I'm actually going to pick. But it really is more like dress rehearsal practice. So, you know, we try and make it as realistic as possible.
If you can say fill in the blank after this draft, it will be a success in your mind.
Maximize our resources. Simple as that. Whatever that looks like, whether that's trades, player selections, you name it, it's really just about maximizing your resources.
Well, we're excited to see you maximize our resources, AB. Thank you so much for the time and best of luck.
Thank you, Nate.
And thank you, Nate. Good job on that. Coming up next, Marvin Harrison Sr. And which college programs have the most draft picks in NFL history? We will attempt to guess the stats. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM, presented by Ticketmaster. Official waitlist to your Cleveland Browns, being a NextGen STM. Best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. Things have been very quiet out of the Marvin Harrison Jr. front, really, since their season ended. He has done next to nothing. He hasn't tested nothing. I did have somebody from PFF I was talking to this morning who said, I love how everyone's making a big deal about how fast he runs a 40. There's literally GPS tracking that shows him consistently running over 20 miles an hour all over the field. He'll be more than fine. He also said that he was his favorite receiver prospect. He put him in the category with Julio Jones and A.J. Green and those type of guys in terms of what he could be.
He's quite good.
He's quite good, yep. Here is this was from Marty Smith of ESPN, and this is his old man.
So his old man's involved, the youngster's involved, Marty's involved. It is a very eye-opening little segment.
Let's go. Let's have a listen.
It's one thing that I wish he had from my game. You got to complain for ball. You got to complain. Monday morning, if I have 5 catches, 70 yards, we can't do nothing else till we have a meeting because I'm not getting the ball. That's it. Throw me the ball, period.
Be a bigger diva. That's the advice for your kid. Be the bigger diva. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I asked him what he would do if he were you, and his answer was, I would go in there and say, give me the f***ing ball.
Straight up.
To what degree have you started to demand the football more?
I mean, not much, really.
Exactly.
Not much.
And I have a different level of expectations for my kid. I expect him to win every one-on-one. I expect him to get open every play. So my expectations are right where they need to be.
What do you believe your ceiling is?
My goal is to be the best receiver in every play.
What does greatness look like for you?
My dad.
All right, I'm conflicted because not on. Whatever. So this kid is the hardest working dude they've ever had come through there. I mean, he's.
And when you say that, you say that
I'm
with
saying
great
it.
Authority.
I'm saying it emphatically. Like they have never had anybody who spends more time in the facility during their time there than him. Like Jugs machine upon. There's some machine they have down there. I don't even know if we have one. That they have down there.
Okay.
That's the state of the art Jugs machine thing that they have, and he is on it constantly, all the way through spring practice. He's there all day. That's all he does. So he's got this work ethic. He's a model citizen in terms of how he's handled himself throughout. So obviously the dad played a part in getting him to what he is and that work ethic and all of it. But then that comes out of the dad's mouth, and I think that's I understand what he means, but like I also don't. So I'm conflicted on what to make of that.
Yeah, that was that didn't sound joyous to me. That didn't sound like a joyous situation for him. His expectations are, it feels like a little bit of a yoke that he's under. He clearly, I think, has the benefit, as many of us do, to say, okay, this is what my dad did that I like. This is what maybe I want to do differently. And he seems pretty resolute in that he's doing it. So I say kudos to Junior.
In the 3 years that he was in Columbus, I never heard from the dad.
Well, yep. And he might have had some periods of time where he could have an argument about not getting the ball enough.
Sure.
Or not making enough plays.
There's no question. But I never heard from, he was never a distraction down there.
Nope.
Senior wasn't. So this is all just, it's just, I've never heard anything.
Like, where is this coming from 48 hours out from the draft? And I don't like, I can appreciate wanting to make your parents proud, but like the fact that the only thing that matters is, you know, what gives you like the, what makes you the happiest, making dad happy. Dude, you got to make yourself happy.
Yep.
You got to take care of you.
Yep.
Like, your parents are already proud of you, and they're already happy for you. Like, you got to go live and do your thing. I hope that this isn't a case where this guy becomes the meddling dad.
Yeah.
And I got to hear from him all the time more than I hear from his kid, who's a pro's pro from what I've seen and everything I've heard so far.
By the way, I would love to hear Peyton Manning discuss a Monday meeting with Marvin Harrison where he had 5 for 71 and he was like, I'm not getting the ball.
Yeah.
I don't imagine that would be a very long conversation.
I feel like Peyton Manning would be like, get out of here.
Yeah.
He seemed pretty adamant that he did it, like, from a pretty tough guy perspective.
You never heard anything from him as a player, though, too, because he wasn't – you never heard anything from him as a player.
No.
He's one of the most anonymous superstars ever. Like, there was never complaining about the ball or complaining about anything. Like,
nope. But it must have.
But maybe it happened behind the scenes, or – maybe he feels like he doesn't get the respect that he's had earned because of the way that he went about his business, and the receivers who get talked about more from that era were the more boisterous ones.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was something. Uno was like, hey, have you seen this? And I'm like, nope, I haven't seen this. And then I heard it, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense for what he was at Ohio State.
No. Nor would his dad.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad didn't do any of that stuff at Ohio. I mean, there's nothing. All right, little guess the stats time.
Yeah, Uno put this together.
All right, go ahead.
All right, I wrote 10.
All right, so this was actually going to be a Griff fact of the day, but we thought it would be more fun if you guys tried to guess the top 10 colleges with the most NFL draft picks in the history of the NFL draft. So I've got the list here of the 10. Where do you guys want to start? What are your first
guesses? I'm not going to try to do an order. I'm going to just throw a name out.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let me get a couple more. So NFL, you got the thing that's tricky here is the NFL. You got to time it up with the NFL. How long the NFL's been in existence? 4, 9. All right, I'm relatively confident. No. Okay, I got 11.
All right, I'll do 11.
But that's cheating. Right. I mean, there's four that are no-brainer in the top 10. That's lock stock, and they're the four winning. They are the Mount Rushmore college football programs, and that's Ohio State, USC, Oklahoma, and USC.
Yeah, USC 2, Ohio State 3, Oklahoma 4.
Ohio USC State 3, two. Oklahoma what?
Oklahoma was 4.
And what was?
USC was what?
2.
What was Alabama?
Alabama is tied for 5th.
Okay, so Notre Dame is one?
Notre Dame is one.
I have Notre Dame on there.
Okay. And that's mostly really old school.
All
right. The first five I wrote down are those five.
Those were the,
you've got five, but there's also another one tied for 5th.
I have Georgia.
So I think tied for 5th, I'm going to go Pennsylvania State.
Pennsylvania State is 6th. Georgia is 9th.
Okay, I did not have Penn State.
So Penn State 6th.
Yeah. Georgia.
I'm going to go Michigan.
I have Michigan.
5th.
Michigan is tied for 5th with Alabama.
Yep.
Okay.
That makes sense. Okay.
So you have 7 and 8 left.
Georgia's 9th. Okay, so I would say Texas.
I have Texas.
Texas is 13th.
Wow.
So the way this is written on here from this, because there's a tie for fifth.
Yeah, I got you. There's not a full 10.
Yeah, the 10th place team is technically Georgia, but they're listed as ninth on here because of the tie.
Okay.
So if you guys want to
This is where it gets tricky, because you say, like, for example, the two that I think would be very high on this list, but it would have to be an incredible amount in a short period of time, are Miami and Florida State.
So I have Miami, but not Florida State.
So, but I don't think that the problem is the league's been around too long, and those weren't programs of consequence in the 50s and 60s.
Miami is 12th.
Yeah.
Okay.
And FSU's nowhere?
Florida State not in the top 20.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So you need another one.
I wrote down Auburn.
Auburn is 19th.
Okay. LSU, Clemson?
I don't think Clemson would have enough. LSU, maybe.
LSU, number 7.
LSU. All right, I got them. Clemson, nothing?
Clemson, no, I don't see them.
Okay. So then we're missing one.
We're missing one. It's got to be a Southern. I don't think it's UCLA. Would it be? Who am I missing? Who are we missing in the South? Florida or Tennessee? Tennessee.
Tennessee is 11th.
Florida?
Florida is it. They are 8th.
Gators.
So that's the top 10 with a tie at 5. The 11th team was Nebraska. They're right there as well.
So the only one I didn't have was I didn't have
UF. I didn't know
Florida.
Yeah. Did they what I think would be really interesting on this, so that Bill Connolly, ESPN, put together, you know, he has that SP Plus thing where he ranks like quality of your team every year. And so he did this going back to World War II. And it is all of the teams that we are just mentioning here. Like, it's all the same teams. And basically the one that's had the best program since World War II is Oklahoma. Number 2 is Alabama. Number 3 was Ohio State. USC was actually not in the top 10. But if you change the war as a metric point to Vietnam, well, then USC's in.
Yep.
Because basically what happens, the 40s and the 50s, and that's how Notre Dame's number 1 on this, because in those days – they poured guys into football, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. That's their run. But from our, like, I think about my kid's lifetime, Notre Dame's never really been a serious program. They played for a national title, but then they get drilled, or they make the playoff.
They've sent plenty of people to the league.
Sure, but not as many as like Miami and Florida State have in the last 25 years.
Right.
Not close.
Since the year 2000.
So Notre Dame is only in first place by 2 picks. They're ahead of USC by 2. So that could change within the next couple of years.
What's their lead on Ohio State?
So Ohio State has 485. Notre Dame has 525. So they got them by quite a bit still.
Okay. The problem is right now USC and Notre Dame are pretty similar as programs. So I don't know that.
It'll be interesting to see throughout the weekend if this list changes.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing, you know what else is pretty interesting? Give me that 1 through 10 again.
Notre Dame, USC, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Michigan, and Alabama tied.
Mm-hmm.
Then Penn State, LSU, Florida, Georgia.
Okay. So here's what's amazing. All of those programs are in great shape right now. Every one of them. They're all playoff teams in the college football playoff next year, or will be vying for it.
Yeah.
Except for Florida. Florida's down.
Penn State?
Yeah, they should be. I mean, they went 10-2 last year.
Step.
Yeah. No, it's all there. That's what's crazy about college football. Like, the teams that were great then are mostly great now. It's really hard to crack that code. That was fun. Good job out of you guys. All right, we'll get your Griff fact of the day. In addition to that, Jake Trotter with who the Browns could be looking at early in this year's draft and what his specific position of need could be. We'll get to it coming up next. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, we'll get to Jake and his thoughts on what the Browns could do in the draft. Before we do, time for the Griff fact of the day.
Fact of the day, fact of the day, fact of the day. It's the Griff fact of the day.
Since the common draft era, which started in 1967, we have only seen 2 years where a running back has not gone in the first round. And if this draft goes the way most experts expect, this will be the third year which we have not seen a running back go in the first round since 1967. So it's pretty interesting, like, as we get more recent into the NFL, that running backs are not going anymore.
Yeah, and that's a function of the change of the way the game is played, primarily. But I do think, as we saw last year with Bijan, if you have a weapon that can be used in the run and pass game, and you're elite, then you can be a first-round pick. That's kind of it.
But what a pick like that fails to take into account is the opportunity cost. And this is why the Falcons weren't a serious organization. Here's the thing. You draft Bijan Robinson, 8th overall. You are immediately making him a top 5-ish paid running back in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you were to draft a quarterback or you were to draft a wide receiver, they are not even in the top 20, 30 at their position.
Right.
And so you're actually, the money saved relative to the position is massive.
Yes.
So drafting a running back, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And you heard Andrew Berry earlier in his comments to me say, you know, he thinks of the running back position as much more of a committee position. We've been spoiled by Nick Chubb, but that's the reality of it. And for a much smaller price tag, you can put together a pretty good room. I think you look at our room now this year, and let's say that we don't know what Nick Chubb's status is going to be.
Yeah.
You've got Jerome Ford. You've got Pierre Strong. You got Nyheim Hines. And then you have Deontay Foreman. Deontay Foreman can be that hammer that Kareem Hunt was, with probably a little more juice at this point in their respective careers. Hines is a very good catcher out of the backfield. Ford had a very nice sophomore season. And I think Pierre Strong's got a lot of juice and special talent. So, like, with that group, you're going to get good production. I mean, last year I think we did it. It was like 2,000 total yards and 20 touchdowns in the running back room.
Yes. Yes. You're viewing it more as a room versus
an individual. Yep.
And that's the thing that's happened. No, I was with you on Atlanta taking Bijan. I remember, in fact, saying, like, I could understand it if you were Philly and you felt like you were a player away, one dynamic player away. An example, and you're not having to pay the quarterback at the time. I don't think they had done the Jalen Hurts deal yet.
Yep.
But even the 49ers, with what they did with Christian McCaffrey, you can do that when you're not paying the quarterback and you feel like McCaffrey's the difference between you playing in a Super Bowl or not.
100%.
And the versatility of McCaffrey allows for that. But like a hammer – by the way, there aren't hammer running backs in the NFL.
Yep.
I mean, look at what Ohio State's doing. They went and got Quinshon Judkins, who's led the SEC in rushing the last 2 years. He's playing alongside Travion Henderson. Travion Henderson, a five-star running out of high school. Yeah. So they have two blue-chip running backs at Ohio State, both of which are going to the draft next year, second-rounders, both of which can play. So that's just kind of the way. What I'm more interested in is if there is something that happens at receiver that changes that. If there are just such a glut of receivers that you're like, boy, we don't need – if some of what's happened at the quarterback position or the running back position transfers over to receiver, is there such a glut of receivers coming in every year?
So the question will be, are you willing to try to do what Minnesota did with Diggs and Justin Jefferson, and how repeatable is that?
I don't know that. Yeah, I don't
know. Or how bad do you have to be to actually get a shot at one of these difference-making receivers? Because at some point then – teams are going to want to, if there is a depressed market, you're going to want these guys on their second contracts that you know are good in the NFL.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just the position where it's just been flooded in recent years of very, very capable guys. Jake Trotter has us taking a wide receiver early in this year's draft. Your thoughts?
I certainly think it's possible. You know, you talk with AB, and you heard my talk with him. It's a weapons league. He's about getting weapons. He's looking for very particular skill sets and unique skill sets in our room. And I think that there is got to be some type of what I would call succession planning in mind, right, for what the Browns may or may not do at that position. Because Amari Cooper, you just don't know how long Amari Cooper – you have with the Browns at this point in his career. I mean, he was drafted, in the 2015 draft? So he's approaching 10 years in the league. You just don't know if you might have to think about going for a receiver. And so, you know,
Troy Franklin's a name that keeps showing up because he can fly and make vertical catches. Roman Wilson is a guy that you like a lot. It feels like the receiver is maybe where they could go, and it goes back to this is our most premium draft asset. So
that's the line.
Right where now. What are you going to use that on? Here are my three guesses. That premium asset is going to be used on either a wide receiver, it's going to be used on an offensive tackle,
mm-hmm.
or it's going to be used on a pass rushing defensive tackle.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. No.
We will likely draft a running back. We will likely draft a linebacker.
You're just not at 54.
That's not happening in the second round.
No. So that's just where the league is. It's where the league is headed, and there are premium positions, and those premium positions. What was the last line he said, what AB said to you, maximizing?
So what would make this successful draft? And he said maximizing
our resources.
Yeah.
So maximizing the resources is an off-ball linebacker or running back at 54.
That's not.
It's just not. That's not what it is. All right. Good job out of you. Good job out of Jake. Good job out of the Griff Stat of the day. Well done. So much more to come. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, so boots on the ground in the Houston area on the new uniforms.
Yep.
The way that I understand it is that anything that even resembles an Oiler look or amalgamation was stopped by the ownership of the Tennessee Titans.
Number one, that's BS. Number two, Goodell needs to intervene and the rest of the owners need to intervene. And then number three, then they just sort of scrapped the H-Town concept and just gone.
Yes.
The white, blue, and the red.
Yes, yes. I don't have a problem.
Or make a white version of your own uniform, your own helmet, your current whatever.
Yeah.
Just make a white helmet.
You can't own white helmets.
They can't own a white helmet.
No. I don't know. Maybe.
I think they could have gotten away with
it's a white crazy, helmet. It's crazy, though, like the amount of power that they.
That logo, the blue face mask, white uniform, the number only being that color blue.
So it doesn't seem like it. It seems like anything that even. Which is wild.
It shouldn't be allowed, though.
No, it should not be allowed that you own a color palette.
Correct.
It's nuts.
It's not right.
No, it's not.
That's not fair.
Come on now.
That's not fair. Come on now. Let them wear those
Oilers. They're just dirty.
Let them wear those Oilers.
Y'all just dirty.
They're sitting on a golden goose.
Next Level is next. Thanks for listening. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.